Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is a comic content creator conversation. I have one of the elder statesmen of comic book podcasting joining me today. And I'm not saying he's old. I'm just saying he's been doing this for a long time. He and his cohorts at CGS certainly inspired me to get started with my own podcast back in the day. So I've been wanting to do this for a long time. It's crossing something off my bucket list. So it's my pleasure to welcome Peter Rios to the show. Peter, great to see you, man.
Hey, Jace, thank you. Yeah, I'm getting up there. You know, when you think back to those early days of CGS, that was 15 years ago, and we look at those pictures and it's like we were just babies back then, you know, even if we were in our early 30s. And I think about listeners and some people say, oh, yeah, I wasn't married back then and I didn't have kids back then. And now they have full families. And it's crazy.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
It is. And I'm glad that we're having you on for one of our 12 days of the Comic Source episodes as well. I mean, I was talking with one of my other co-hosts last night just about the insanity. I don't know why I thought this was a good idea doing, you know. First day of Christmas 1 and then 2 all the way up to 12. And then I added up and it's 78 episodes in 12 days. And, you know, it's my own fault. I procrastinated. I was supposed to start them on December 1st and I didn't. And now I'm getting 2 hours of sleep a night, but it's great that you're going to be a part of this. So listeners, if you're listening to this on the day it's released, it's Christmas Day. So certainly for me, you know, Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays. Hope you're enjoying it. So let's start there, Peter. Let's talk about a little holiday tradition before we get into the podcast stuff. Is Christmas a big deal back there with your family? You have traditions, anything special going on?
I mean, we normally come together. I mean, I have a very large Puerto Rican family, and we pretty much for the past, at least for all my life, we always try to gather and then we disperse if people have wives or husbands,
right,
or,
yeah,
you know, significant others, right? That's a thing that we do for Thanksgiving. It's a thing we do for Christmas. I mean, obviously this year there's some limitations just based on, the situation at hand. So, but I have to say in terms of like traditions, really just the gathering, right? Like it's really just about all of us gathering up. Usually the kids are opening up the gifts. All the rest of us are sitting there just watching and whatever and making funny comments. And I don't have any kids, so I get to, be the uncle that makes the jokes and spoils the other ones, spoils the kids or lets them be kids, you know? It's kind of nice. This is, you mentioned off the air that, you said your wife really enjoys this time of year. From Halloween through like mid-January is like my favorite time of year.
Favorite time of year, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, all the holidays, my birthday, the New Year's, I'm usually doing a theater show at this time. And then the middle of January is when I start the new semester where I work. So I love it. I love this time. I love all the festivities. Even during this crazy year of 2020, I'm trying to find stuff to enjoy. So, yeah.
Yeah, and that's a good way to look at it. And again, everybody, if you're not getting together, I mean, my family, I have a large family as well. We're not getting together this year. It's just, better safe than sorry. And we'll all get back together in 2021 and we'll look back and go, hey, this is a heck of a lot better. We'll appreciate it all the more. Because I'm sure it's probably the same for you, Peter. There's people that's the only time of year I ever see them anymore. We're all so busy.
Right. I mean, I think one of your bios, I read something about conventions, right? Or you talked about conventions and I don't know about you, but I mean, I haven't been to a major convention even prior to 20, like before any of this pandemic. It's been a long time since I hit a major convention and seeing people, even those friends and those people that you might go to a convention and see once a year, depending on where you go. It's the same sort of thing. Like, it's always nice. I guess maybe I took it for granted for a little bit. You're always, once a year, you're able to catch up with somebody, mm-hmm. And check base. And now we're having to do that with my family too, like every couple of days, make sure I'm checking in with my mom or whatever. I've had two sisters who've been diagnosed with COVID. My stepdad was diagnosed. Like, so it's been crazy, right? And that family communal thing, boy, it's kind of glad that we have social media and Zoom and all that. Right. The only time we can get to powwow, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, just that human interaction. But everybody's recovered. Everybody's doing okay.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's still, you know, that whole smell taste thing.
Right. Yeah.
But yeah, and it's kept us away, just for safety reasons. But it just goes to show you, you know, your bubble is not what you think it is.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. In fact, my wife was just today. So we're working from home, but she goes in the office about once a week. So, and she's an accountant for a big international landscaping firm. And one of their vendors came in to pick up a check from her on Monday. And then she gets an email from him today. He's like, yeah, I've got COVID. But she's like, he had a mask on. I had a mask on. I didn't touch anything he touched. He even had his own pen to sign out. But it just goes to show you, it only takes one slip up, you know, and right. And there you go.
You know, what's weird is, not to go on a tangent, but for some reason, I'm rewatching The Walking Dead. I don't know why. Right. Because I stopped after one of the major characters left recently. Mm-hmm. I don't want to say, in case you haven't seen it or whatever. But so I haven't seen it in a couple seasons, and I don't know why. Those first six episodes I think are really great, and then I kept watching. It's 10 years old, right? It premiered 10 years ago. There are some weird parallels going on in that show.
Really?
Yeah, the early episodes where they're still trying to figure out things, and just some of the dialogue that eerily relates to everything that's going on now. You know, I know people have made jokes about the pandemic and what's going to come from the vaccines or whatever, but still, watching that show, living where we are now, there's every now and then it just makes it a little bit more, you know, heart palpitating. Like, oh,
yeah. But, yeah. Really, it's crazy. So funny how stories will do that too. In fact, I've recently been reading the Age of X-Men story.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah, I saw that.
And it's so, you know, as much as X-Men tried to create a utopia, it's so fascist, you know, and so many of the things, it's like mirrors, you know, stuff we've had politics here. So yeah, I totally see that. It's weird how, you know, life can imitate art and vice versa sometimes. But I'm glad you brought up watching The Walking Dead, because I wanted to ask you, you know, we're talking about the craziness of the pandemic. Let's flip the switch here. Talk about some of the positives of 2020. Are there things that you've been binge watching? Are there comics you've been catching up with? What are some of the highlights for you this year?
Yeah, I started the whole around like March. I was one of those people that jumped into Game of Thrones pretty late, reading the novels, I should say, not just the TV series. So I finally finished the books at the beginning of the year so that I could power through the whole HBO season, right? So I had seen Game of Thrones season one, season two. I think I even got all the way up to maybe season three before I stopped, where, you know, I didn't want to watch anymore because I was still reading. Mm-hmm. So I managed to finish all the books and then just plowed through the series after it had already ended. So I was maybe about 2 months behind where everybody, you know, once the finale hit, it was another 2 months before I reached the finale. So I was out of all of that discussion, that crazy discussion everybody was having with Game of Thrones, the finale. That was the first big sort of binge thing right at the start of all of the quarantine and all that, because, you know, I wasn't sleeping. I was watching, you know, 5-6 episodes a night, just overnight. That was the big binge thing. So that kind of kicked off the rest of my, you know, what else am I going to do to make up all this time? Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting, because I've never watched Game of Thrones. My son tried to get me into it early on, and I remember him being at the house and watching the first episode, trying to watch the first episode, falling asleep. Then the next night, trying to watch the first episode, falling asleep. I'm like, dude, you're falling asleep. Like, I'm not going to watch this. And I just never got into it. Then obviously it became a huge thing, and people talking about it, people at the office. So I had things spoiled for me, but I didn't care because I knew I was never going to watch it. But being that people... It was one of those water cooler shows, and that's so rare these days. Most things are, you know, you binge it or whatever, you watch it all at once. So that was a different experience, because you did binge it. Did it make any difference to you? Were you spoiled on anything? Did you, you know, walk around with your fingers in your ears toward that last season? Or
there was like one or two things I think that were spoiled, and I sort of was the same way. I was like, okay, fine. You know, I heard about that, whatever. All good. But because I also was reading up to a certain point, and I heard about what was happening in later seasons, I was kind of doing a thing where I was looking at the books and going, yeah, that kind of makes sense. Why is everybody up so up in arms? Like, if you read the books, like, I could see where they would, you know, extrapolate to where they got to in, gotcha, in the past, yeah, two seasons, right? So, and you're right, like, the last time I was kind of annoyed at myself that I missed the larger conversation, because the last time I was really invested in something like that was Lost. That was the, you know, when I was right there for the last season and, you know, episode to episode. But you're right. So I came away with the ending going, yes, I see everybody's points. I totally get it. And, you know, conversations, whenever it comes to like the end of something, whether it's a comic, the last chapter of a Stephen King novel, whatever, everybody always has major opinions about that last whatever. So I totally saw their side. But because I had read all those books, I went, I can see why they went the direction they went, even if it was shortchanged or whatever.
So, right. Yeah. And it did eventually veer off from the books, right? And he still has more books coming, supposedly.
Right. Like two more, I think it is. And from where I read, it's not so much a veering off, because there, you know, the books stop at a certain, I think it stops at the end of season four, or season five. But what it does is it merges storylines. So characters that aren't even in the TV series, their storylines get dropped off onto other characters.
Right.
And gotcha. So you're getting some of the larger points. It's all the, you know, little stuff that gets lost. Yeah.
Yeah. And what about The Mandalorian? That's another one that we saw that recently had its season two finale, and people, and this is what's so interesting. And I guess it all goes to algorithms or whatever. Cause I had people, friends that were saying, you know, oh, I got it spoiled 10 minutes, you know, at what, 2 a.m. in the morning, 10 minutes after it was over. Like, what are you doing on social media? Whatever. And they were complaining about how quickly it was spoiled. I don't see any spoilers in my feed, but I'm also not posting about The Mandalorian because I don't watch it. So maybe that's why I wasn't, you know, seeing it. And I still don't know what they're talking about. But is that a show that you've been watching?
No, I'm not a big Star Wars person. I'm more of a Star Trek person, you know? Yeah. So I did see. Or did I search out what happened? I think I searched out what happened. But then once I did, I started to see stuff online and all that. And I'm really good at like math, like geek math. If somebody says something that's not a spoiler, but they're hinting at it, and I know what it is they're talking about, 8 out of 10 times I can already figure out.
Put it together, yeah.
Yeah, right. Because none of these shows are that deep that you can't try to figure out. In fact, I think that's part of the reason why I'm not such a big Star Wars fan in the last couple of years, is because I tend to like my sci-fi, soap opera, space opera stuff a little deeper, a little, I want it to mean something in the larger context, you know? And so when that happened, when that conversation happened, and even the first season or the first episode of Mandalorian way back, I was like, okay, that's fine. You know, well, let's see where it goes, and you know, whatever. So that's a franchise that, you know, I'll watch when I get to it, but it's not high up on my franchise list, much to everybody's dismay. They're always like, oh, how can you not? You grew up in the 70s. How could you not? I was like, ah, that's my cousin. My cousin was the one that had the giant Millennium Falcon. And wasn't there a mountain or something where you could put your toy, all the toys in, or some kind of case that looked like a mountain?
Yeah. There was a Darth Vader. It looked kind of like a mountain.
Oh, that's what
they had.
Okay.
Yeah. And then they had the Death Star playset. Yeah. I had, you know, cousins that had all that stuff.
Right. Right.
Yeah. I liked it. I liked it well enough. But for me, I'm a more of a Star Trek guy also. And the show that got, I mean, because obviously, you know, as kids, they, especially on Saturday afternoons, you see the reruns of the original series. And I definitely, you know, watched a lot of those. But when I really became a huge Trekkie, when I got sucked in, for me, it was The Next Generation.
Absolutely.
That was like my jam that just, you know, pulled me in. And now, man, we got Star Trek shows coming left and right. We have even shows that haven't been announced yet that I know people that are, you know, writers that are working on them, they obviously can't say anything. And I'm not going to say anything. I don't want to get them in trouble. But there are even more shows right now in development. I mean, it's like a golden age for Star Trek right now.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you talk about binging shows. That's something that I did even way before, like years ago. I said, you know what? I'm the same way. I'm a Next Gen fan. And I was there from day one of Next Gen. You know,
yeah,
I
me
was
too.
The big, you know, newscast announcements and all that other stuff. So I said, you know, a bunch of years ago, I said, okay, I really should watch the original series. You know, I love the movies. I love Next Generation. I like the new movies, you know, so I was like, okay, let me really be the Star Trek fan that I say I am. You know, I've read some novels over the years. So I said, let's go back to the original series. And I deep dived in, I went into all of the original series and I said, well, let's keep going. I went all the way into the animated series, Next Generation, and I'm currently in season 4 of Deep Space Nine and season 2 of Voyager. So, and I, which means I have years of content left, yeah. You know, because I don't know Voyager well. I don't know the back half of Deep Space Nine well, or I should say at all. I don't know Enterprise. I've only seen a few episodes, and I've only seen one season of Discovery. So I love that. That's my big journey. That's my big geek journey right now. Star Trek. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm kind of the same way. I mean, I loved Next Gen so much that I didn't really get involved in the later stuff because I didn't want it to disappoint. You know what I mean? Like I watched the first season of Voyager. I started watching the second and I wasn't like Janeway just wasn't doing it for me. So I kind of dropped off and I haven't gone back either, but like you, I someday it's one of those things that's on my list. Someday I do want to watch it all. But you know, it sounds like you've dove a little deeper than I have. Let me ask you, do you have a favorite captain, if you had to pick one?
I mean, I'm gonna always go, I think, with Picard. However, I know everybody says that Sisko is really great, and I'm 4 seasons into Deep Space Nine, and he is cool. I think not only the thing I like about the captain in Deep Space Nine, or at least Sisko or Avery Brooks, is they allow him to do things that the other captains hadn't done to that point. Mm-hmm. Have a family, be a father, be a black father, right? You know, it's very interesting watching that show, especially me, you know, being Puerto Rican, watching that show and seeing 3 generations of Sisko's, the grandfather, the father, and Jake, you know, all play 3 black men in a scene talking science fiction, talking about whatever, and you just watch it and you're just, that's it, right? Like there's no other, you just watch this show that has some really great representation. Picard is my guy. Picard is also my mom's guy. Every time she would come walk by the screen and see him, okay. So that crazy episode where the 4 lights episodes, right?
Yeah.
Where he's captured by Cardassians. He's strung up. They strip him. She walks by, he's in turmoil, and she's like, oh, look at his thighs. Oh, look at that man. Oh, I was like, mom, he's being tortured right now. I don't care. He's my man. So I love Picard because of, you know, probably has to do with a lot of the Shakespeare theater stuff that, you know, I'm in theater. He obviously from Shakespeare. But I'm waiting for the Sisko that everybody likes in Deep Space Nine. He's great. I'm not saying he's not there. He's not. An amazing actor and an amazing character, but the Sisko that they always talk about, I'm 4 seasons in and I don't think he's quite the one that they're talking about just yet. Obviously it'll come with the whole Dominion War.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Yeah. So for me, it's Picard. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. I feel the same way, but again, I also feel like I don't really have much choice because I've seen, so, you know, I've seen some of Voyager, I've seen Next Gen, and I've seen the original. So I don't have like a lot to choose from. But my buddy Jason Inman, who is a giant Star Trek fan as well, his guy's Sisko. So I've promised, like, I will get there. I'll watch Deep Space Nine. But you know, obviously we know you're involved with the theater and acting and stuff. And you mentioned Picard. So let me ask you this: I've been trying to determine this holiday season what my favorite version of A Christmas Carol is, and I've got like 6 of them that I want to watch. I'm through 4 of them. Have you seen the Christmas Carol with Patrick Stewart as Scrooge?
No, I have not.
Oh, you gotta
really
watch it.
I need to. Yeah.
Yeah, it is a lot of fun. It is a whole lot of fun. And it was funny when my wife and I and daughter were watching it. There are times where things are getting, you know, pretty surreal when the ghosts are, you know, wandering around and showing them stuff or whatever. And I would lean over and say, computer in program. Because it's just, you get that vibe sometimes, you know, yeah. Things are, so yeah, it's
I'm not a, you know, what's so funny, I'm not a fan of the Dixon Hill hologram.
Yeah, that stuff's okay.
Yeah. Now, okay, can I extrapolate a little further? Can I go into another sci-fi franchise and say, I don't know if he was a captain. I think he was something else. Adama in the Battlestar Galactica reboot. Oh, he's amazing. There's a guy. I forget what his title is. I know he was an admiral at one point, but I forget what it was before that. Commander Adama or something like that.
Yeah.
I think he's fantastic. Acting-wise, character-wise, you know, he's an SOB to start with. The whole relationship with him and the president that develops, like, that's a guy that I would be on his ship. I would, you know, as terrible as the circumstances are in that show, he's a great commander. Yeah.
Well, Edward James Olmos, I think, is an incredible actor. And I don't think he gets enough credit for how, I mean, I think he's a generational talent. I mean, that guy, he can do any kind of role and nails it. You know, I mean, I remember him back when he was in Blade Runner, you know, it was a bit part and he owned it. He made it his, you know, you know, Stand and Deliver and Battlestar Galactica, Miami Vice. I mean, yeah, he's amazing for sure.
There's my geek cred getting knocked down. I still have not seen the original Blade Runner.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, you got some time.
Especially me being a huge sci-fi person, I should, but I haven't.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's all right. I have some holes in my – I mean, I'm a giant comic book guy. My biggest hole, and people just go crazy when they hear is I've never read Sandman, not a single issue.
Oh, you know, hey, I've read a few issues, more than just a single, but I – That's a blind spot. In fact, I always joke about how I walked into the comic store one day and I was like, oh, this looks like a cool, you know, comic Sandman number one. Oh, I like that cover. Oh, okay. This is kind of cool. All right. Maybe I'll pick it up next week. I never went back. I never picked it up. You know, how many years later they were ending the series. And I was like, oh, right. That's that book that I could have been reading. Yeah.
Yeah. You could have made a little money for yourself too.
Yeah, exactly.
Were you a fan of we mentioned Battlestar. Were you a fan of the original one? Did you watch that when you were a kid?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure, you know, I guess if anybody who grows up in the 70s, you've seen random episodes of Battlestar, Buck Rogers, you know, the Black Hole movie I had a fondness for that. What else was there in terms of sci-fi TV? No, so I mean, I know of those – of that series, but I haven't gone back to watch it yet.
Yeah. So that was one for me that, I mean, I remember one summer in particular that, it would come on every night at 7 and I would always be outside like playing around, but I always made sure to come inside at 7, whatever I was doing, to watch it. And then I'd go back outside. That was great.
Puppy was just destroying look, Puppy was destroying. This is not for audio on NBC. This was my 40th surprise party where my family surprised
That's
me.
That's great. That's perfect. That's a perfect transition. Let's talk a little bit about CGS and the Wild West days in the beginning.
Yeah.
There really were, I mean, not that there are rules now, but there was nobody to emulate. There was nobody to look at like what had been done before. You guys were just making it up on the fly. Tell us a little about that.
So Brian Deemer, the guy who really was the guy who thought about the idea, and because he read an article in Wired magazine in late 2004, wanted to do a podcast, wanted to do this thing that everybody was jumping into on a very you know, amateur level, and said, you know, the only thing I can really talk about is comics. And I had moved back to Reading, Pennsylvania, which is where we were all based, after a breakup with a girlfriend we were living in New York. So it was like perfect timing for me to like really jump into something, you know? Mm-hmm. So, So he said, okay, we're going to do a show about comics. We're going to make them really short episodes, 15 minutes, nothing. We're just going to talk about some books that we like or that were out at the time. He had one segment called Stump the Rios, you know, which was like a trivia thing. But I think and while we listened, we might have listened to, like, who was out at the time? Keith and the Girl was out at the time. Dawn and Drew, they were like a really big podcast back in the day. And then there was a solo host, comics focused person. Did he do a lot of comics? He might have done other things too. Neil Gorman still does some stuff to this day. And there were some other ensemble formatted shows, but nothing that we were listening to. What we really based the show on in a very surface level was we were big fans of Howard Stern in the 90s and 2000s. And we said, let's just talk, right? We already do that at the comic store with all of our friends. We're just sticking a microphone in front of our face this time. That's really the only difference. And with Stern back in those days, if something worked, great. If it didn't, also great. You at least tried it. It didn't matter, right? Yeah. So that was really it. For us, it was about bite-sized episodes, conversation, and we were ourselves because we knew each other. So I think that's the thing that really helped a lot of the shows that are still around to this day. If the hosts were friends before they hit record, you got that feeling. And I think that's what attracted listeners. I think that's the thing that propelled the show. Yeah.
And then it caught fire and you guys expanded and you started doing guests and you had your own convention for a little while. I mean, did it feel like a runaway train at that point?
Yeah, it did. I think I even heard Brian mention that just recently, where it was like you almost were doing it because the rock was just rolling down the hill and we just had to keep up with it, right? We just, whatever that metaphor is. And it was fun, right? Because there was no social media like we know it today. YouTube was, if it was around, it was just starting to begin. The whole idea of a viral video with like Numa Numa and Star Wars Kid and all that other stuff, like that was just starting to be a thing. There was no Twitter. We joined Twitter, I think, in around like 2008, you know. There was nothing communal. There was nothing conversational, at least to that degree. What did we have? MySpace, you know, and yeah, we had some of that stuff. So I think what helped is we were at a point where we were kind of like a center point for a lot of people. And then they would come listen to the show, join the forum, talk to other people, start their own podcasts, go to conventions. They would meet people. I mean, we had whole tribes of people that, like, on the forums, a whole bunch of people from Australia that met up and knew each other. Then people like in California, San Diego, because of the San Diego Comic Con. Where else there was? The UK, there was a big group in the UK, you know, that then got together and knew each other from the show. And then once we started having our own thing, that was another thing where people would meet at our convention, our super shows, and would go, let's create a comic book together. Let's start a publishing company, you know. Action Lab grew out of one of the super shows. So again, because we struck at the right time, we were able to be kind of like a center point for a lot of these things. There are tons of podcasts, blogs, video bloggers, comic professionals who either started from or worked their way through CGS and just have gone on to become great things, you know. So it's amazing.
Yeah, there's some early Tom King episodes out there.
Right?
Yeah.
Tom King, Dave Wachter, who's going to be doing an Iron Fist book now. You know, people even like Ryan Stegman, you know, on King in Black, and Venom. Like, we met him through he was doing work at Marcosia Comics, you know, and I remember seeing Chris Burnham in Artist Alley at like Pittsburgh, maybe Chicago, somewhere else, doing sketches for like 10, 20 bucks, you know. And now Chris Burnham is Chris Burnham, you know. Certainly Mike Norton, Jamal Igel, Brent Schoonover is now doing, you know, it's just Jonathan Hickman. Jonathan Hickman. So you're reading the Hickman stuff, right? I think. Yes. He emailed us, said, "Hey, I have a book coming out from Image called Nightly News. Here's a PDF." We weren't the only ones. He emailed a whole bunch of people.
Right.
Would you want to read it and would you want to talk about it? We read it. We liked it. We had him on, you know, Jonathan Hickman. Now look, Jonathan Hickman, he's the granddaddy of X-Men books right now. So,
yep. And an impossible interview to get. He hates doing press and promoting stuff. And he reached out to you, you know?
Yeah. I mean, but back then he was just Jonathan Hickman who has a book that he had been working on, you know, and that's the beauty, I think, of the longevity of the show, being able to see that history. And I'm sure you probably experienced too, is I used to try to say, like, a lot of people who just start out in podcasting, you know, don't always try to go for the Stan Lees and the Bendises and the, you know, Gail Simone. Like, you're shooting big, which is great. And it's going to, you know, but also try to develop new creators that really do need the promotion or that want to talk, because you're talking to someone who is really, when they're first starting out, they are geeks just as much as everybody else. And in the long run, they might remember you down the road. And when they are, you know, bigger or they have something to push and they're like, you know what, I'm going to give it to that person first because they trusted me when I was just starting. So that was a bit of advice that we got early on, was make sure you take baby steps, and it really helped us out. Yeah.
I mean, it's so true. And I'm, and here's the thing, you know, like, you guys started it cause it was, you were as much, hey, we want to podcast and catch on to this new trend that sounds like fun, as you were about, hey, let's celebrate our love of comics. I always came at it from, for the number one reason I podcast is cause I want more people reading comics. So from my perspective, if you're talking about, well, yeah, if I get, you know, a Scott Snyder or, you know, Jim Lee to come on, then yeah, I'm going to get a lot, you know, a lot of downloads on that episode and it's more people reading comics. But the point being that if I get somebody who's just starting out and they may need more help than a Jim Lee or a Scott Snyder, their book needs the exposure, that can still get people reading comics. So yeah, I mean, I try not to say no to anybody. If it looks like a quality product, then yeah, that's why we do the Kickstarter spotlights and things like that.
Yeah, that's why we used to do something called Indie Challenge, where I would go through the previews and we would pick four titles out of the back of previews, you know, away from the big five or whatever you want to call, you know, the big publishers. And just go, oh, it was totally blind, you know. Eventually, when it caught on, we would get people who would want to submit for it, you know. Mm-hmm. But early on, it was just, oh, this looks like a really crazy book. This looks awesome. This looks cool. Let's just talk about it. And then we would get the creators on just for, you know, just short little bursts in an episode. And that was a great way to expand our knowledge of who else was out there, you know, same thing, get people to read comics, get people introduced to, you know, I think that's how we along the way, like, got exposed to like Brett Weldelay and oh God, there's probably a ton more that I'm going to forget, people that I now follow, you know, all the time because of just that one little random book way back when. So yeah. You're right. If it's not about going back into, you know, can you get people to if you podcast, you're podcasting because you're excited to talk about something, right? So why would you want to talk about? I'm not always a fan of people who head to the negative all the time. You know, if they're like, okay, we're going to talk about the new Mandalorian. Boy, I hated that, and why did it's like, whoa! You already jumped. In academic terms, you jumped like, you know, 20 stages, you know, like, back up, you know, lay it out for us. What did you like? You know, then you can go critique it, you know, but if I don't understand what you like, I'm not going to care about what you don't like. So yeah, you're right. Get people to read books. That really was a big goal for us. Yeah.
And you're preaching to the choir here. I mean, here's the thing. There's so many good books out there. Why should I talk about the bad ones? And then, you know, whether I know somebody personally or not, I can always separate, you know, their work from, you know, I may like them personally and I may not like their work. And, you know, I would never attack somebody personally. But here's the other thing that people don't realize. And once you've done it for a while, and you know this because you do get to know these people as people, nobody sets out to make a bad comic.
Right.
They're not trying to fail.
Right. Right.
You know, we all make mistakes. We're all human. Take it with a grain of salt. And then the other part is there's so much negativity on the internet. Do you really want to add to that?
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, I'm pretty sure I've been harsh on some things, you know, like sloppy editorial mistakes. I can remember, you know, a storyline or two where I was like, wow, how did that get past editorial, yeah, you know, and all that. But you're right. You know, at the end of the day, comics are a product. Mm-hmm. They really are a product that are trying to drive whatever it is the company wants, money, exposure, whatever. Yes, you know, it's awesome when comics can break the mold and be, you know, high art or literature or, you know, breakthrough just geekdom and hit the masses like something like Walking Dead or whatever. You know, they're a product. So there are people behind the scenes that have to put all this together and their deadlines are crazy. And it's amazing that they get the product out the way they do month after month after month after month, sometimes twice a month, which is insane. So yeah, I do love a good rag session, but I try to always, I want to talk about what I want to talk about. And if I do have things to say, I'm going to make sure that at least people understand that if I'm negative or if I'm critiquing something, well, here's why, mm-hmm, you know, not just that I just hate it and that's it. Here's, you know, like I'm watching the Titans TV series and there's a lot of stuff in it I don't like. And I'm a huge New Teen Titans fan, yeah, but there's stuff in the development of the TV writing that I'm like, okay, why did you set this up if you didn't follow through with it? Like, okay, now I'm going to start talking in those terms, which I think is different than just going, I hate it. Don't watch it. It sucks. Goodbye.
That's me with, you know, as much as I say there's plenty of good books, don't talk about the bad ones. Superman's my favorite character. I have not liked the Brian Michael Bendis run, and I have not been shy about saying, hey, I don't like it. I don't think it's working. But like you said, but here's why. Here's what I see as the things that aren't, you know, going well. Yeah. But I know, you know, and obviously Teen Titans, you're a huge fan. Anybody who, you know, listens to your show or follows you would know that. But just a big DC fan in general. So let me ask you, how are you feeling about Future State? And then we've had some hints about what's coming after now and just the future of DC in general. Obviously, 2020, we've seen a lot of change there. And really, when you look at the solicits for March 2021, man, there's hardly a recognizable name in terms of writers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I it's funny. I was asked someone was like, hey, let's talk about Future State. Let's talk about the books as they're announced. Let's talk about the Infinite Futures, right? Is that what it's called after, right?
Infinite
Forever? Frontier. Frontier.
Frontier. There you go. Infinite, yeah. Frontier. Yeah.
Sorry. And I said, you know, the speculation game on that, or not speculation, but like just trying to figure out where the stories are going to go. I'm not always so interested in that. Now, one thing that DC has done well, and maybe this is my biased opinion, I love when they do one-shots that are kicking off whatever the next, mm-hmm, phase of their thing is. So if you think of, like, go all the way back to, like, Countdown to Infinite Crisis, the 80-page giant that, you know, led to the death of a character but kicked off this whole storyline. DC Rebirth, one of the most recent ones that was really good. And there have been other ones where – whether it's a dollar comic or, you know, $3.99 or whatever, that sort of one shot book, DC always usually nails those more so than like Marvel, you know, not to compare, but I always try to, like, Marvel Legacy was pretty decent, but then they always stuff like reprints in the back or something, yeah, else. And it's like, no, that's not what we want. Here is your pilot for your season, if you, right, want to call it that, you know. So in that regard, I am really looking forward to it because I'm a DC reader that grew up reading DC comics 3 years prior to the crisis. So for me, change is inevitable. I lived through it back then, as I'm sure you probably did. Like,
yeah.
Okay, let it, whenever it happens, great. What, Flashpoint into New 52? Awesome. Going into DC Rebirth? Great. Whatever. Let, bring it on. I also have to say, too, that I think DC as a company is a little, while they can be real conservative at times, I thought they were smart with this whole 2020 pandemic thing, in that you add in the you know, Dan DiDio leaving or being fired. They knew they had to do something different out of whatever this was. Whereas some other publishers kind of were like, okay, we'll just pause and then we'll just get back to the same old thing. Well, you know, I don't know. I don't know which one is going to win out in the end. And I don't even know what that means, winning out, money-wise, critical-wise, whatever. So I'm looking forward to it because I love Starting Points. And I like some of the risks they're taking and some of the challenges they're taking. They've been really – I think I heard you mention this too in one of your Future State episodes, where DC is a little bit more risk-taking when it comes to format. So they've been dealing with all these Walmart anthologies, and they're putting it to their books now, you know. And I know some of the books are, you know, obviously more expensive because they have backup features. However, if it's the choice of reading, I have to buy a $3.99 Justice League and a $3.99 Justice League Dark, sometimes Justice League twice a month. Or I get one giant book for $5 that has both, and it's only once a month. In the long run, I'm saving money, actually, because now I'm buying, you know, you're buying a $6 book as opposed to two books for $8, maybe more, because they double ship the things, right? Which I never was a fan of, double shipping. So I don't know what that model is going to look like for retailers. The retailers are the ones that have to support it more than the readers. Obviously, the readers have to support it too. It should be interesting. I think, like you, I've been cutting down on paper a lot, so I'm trusting digital. I have the DCU app. There are things that get dumped on there that I'm like, great, now I can read it. You know, I don't care about the 6 month gap. So I think what they're doing is trying to figure out what is publishing, what is print, what is publishing. Let's get these anthologies. Let's push to digital, and they just got to see what works.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to keep an open mind because I feel kind of the same way about you. There are a few things that have me worried. I feel like, yeah, bring in new talent, but there should be a few more establishing. But here's the other thing: we haven't heard all the books yet. We know there's still things to come. So it's kind of a wait and see. But to go back to something we were talking about before with CGS, when you guys were at your peak. And I've done this, and I still try to put out almost daily because it seems there's an audience for it when I do that. And I did. I think I went a little over a year where I didn't miss a single day. And it was grueling. And I know you did the same thing with the daily video for a while. But when you guys were at CGS at your peak, were you guys daily?
We eventually hit 5 episodes a week. We would record on a Sunday and Monday night, and we would try to do 3 episodes one night. Usually on a Sunday, and then on Monday we would do 2. Now, every now and then we would have like an episode in the can if one of us was doing like a spin-off episode, and then we would only have to record 2 episodes. But yeah, we tried to push to 5 a week pretty early too, because as you said, the demand was there. Mm-hmm. For people that were just hanging out and going to work from 9 to 5, 10 to whatever, they were like, you know, okay, I can listen to a 3-hour episode every day, no problem, you know. I think what happened, we used to get a lot of emails. We used to get emails, people say, oh my God, you're putting out too many episodes. But we knew that those people were in a minority because the numbers spoke differently, as you mentioned, right? And also, there wasn't a lot of competition, not even in podcasting, but in the geek world to begin with, right? Like now, every major website has money to invest to not only do a podcast, but to do a video along with it, right? Yeah. We didn't have that back then. So the 5 days a week thing, while it was grueling on us, you know, to go back to that whole metaphor of, you know, the train was rolling and we just had to go with it. We also were inundated with a lot of content because we were like, okay, every month we have to do a previews. Every month we wanted to do a book of the month club, but then we want to get some interviews in there. But then we also want to do regular comic talk episodes. Oh, but then we should probably squeeze in like a top five and hey, here's a movie that we got to cover. And, right. You know, so there was no end to the content, you know, we could have done 7 days a week if we were making money and sitting there at the studio all day, you know? So, the trick of it is, and I'm sure you might have experienced this, and I experienced this when I did the Daily Rios that first year when I was doing 5 episodes a week. I just made sure that I wanted them to be bite-sized. I wanted them to be easily digested. Sometimes I would do a half hour. Sometimes I would do 30 seconds and let the audience figure out what the heck it was that I was talking about, you know, or I was playing some random news clip or whatever. I was just trying to be experimental. But the same thing like you, people were listening. In fact, when I stopped doing the 5 days a week, some of those numbers dropped off, you know, which was like, I can't keep this going. It's hard.
it does get grueling. And for me, this is the thing. If I'm actually going to talk about a book, that's always a minimum like 20 to 30 minutes. And my wife's always like, how can you talk about one comic for 30? I'm like, I could talk about one comic for 3 hours if I go panel by panel. There's a lot. Do not understand. Like my wife doesn't get comic. And, you know, I love her to death. And she's tried, but she just doesn't do the whole bit. She's like I tried to get her into comics by reading Joshua Dysart's Harbinger, which I think is just a great thing that, and she would be into it. And sure enough, like she read the first issue and she's like, if this was a novel, if this was a book, I would be just sucked in. She's like, but yeah, I read the first issue. Like, yes, me too. Now I'm done. I don't want to. She just doesn't do this. She'd rather, you know, make up the pictures, I guess, in her own mind. But yeah, it does get grueling. So I imagine at some point it had to start feeling like a job. Did that, I mean, is that part of the reason that you guys kind of drift away? Like, that's just too much?
It was getting, so when I left the show, I was getting, I was producing the show and then I was getting really busy with work, with my theater work. And I was just about ready to start a new job teaching at a college. So I remember pushing near the end of like my producership or whatever, I was like, you know, hey, we don't have to do 5 episodes. You know, like I remember like having conversations every now and then, like, or if we do an interview and, you know, if you're not feeling it, you know, you don't have to, like, not everybody has to be there. Like if you make it a job, if you make it like, oh, I got to be there, then it's going to feel like a job. Right. Yeah. And what was funny was then after I had left the show, they actually did start cutting down on how many episodes they were doing, you know. Some of that was just because they had to pick up a lot of the producing end of it too. So there are many episodes that I'm sure people listen to and they're like, okay, you can tell that we're tired or we're not in some one of the other geeks or a few of the other geeks aren't into it, you know. And I think that large of a cast, you're better served with that kind of schedule doing kind of like a rotation, which is why we used to always joke, like Pants used to skip a lot of Marvel episodes back in those days. And we used to, you know, poke fun at him. But a lot of times I would say, Pants, just show up because you do have insight on things like original art, or maybe you have a question as a newbie, you know. But he didn't have an interest in it. So, okay, well, then that's fine. Then he didn't show up, you know. So it's a tricky thing. It's a tricky thing. If it was a job, if we were getting paid, then I think there might be different ways to go about, you know, recording. You know, you don't have to put so many episodes in one night of a recording. But then there were times like we would get an interview that somebody would say, hey, we want you to interview this person. They want to do it at 3 o'clock in the afternoon on a weekday. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, half the crew couldn't do that because they were working. You know, I was fortunate enough that I could make that happen. You know, Yeah, it's challenging. It's challenging. I don't think nowadays people have to invest. It's hard to get an ensemble show off the ground these days because, as I said, there are people on YouTube that have the money, the interns, and the support to do it slicker than anybody else. Doesn't mean it's going to be better. It's just going to be slicker, right? And then you have people like Kevin Smith doing podcasts and geek podcasts and the Nerdists and all that other stuff. So the reason they're able to, you mentioned algorithm, the reason they're able to break through is because they have a staff behind them to make it happen. And they'll create the podcast and then they'll have five people who dump it on Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat, and everywhere else. So if you're just doing it yourself, be realistic about your approach because as you said, you don't want to lose sleep over this because then eventually it will start to get to feel like work.
Yeah. And I remember maybe it was last year, 2018, when I went looking at numbers. I was just curious, you know, because I had kind of plateaued and I was looking at it. And there's some insane number of podcasts, you know, 600,000 or some in the hundreds of thousands of new episodes every month, you know, if you're talking about all podcasts. But then if you looked at podcasts that had gone past, like, first of all, there was a big break between just getting past single digits. And then there was another getting to triple digit, you know, like, yeah, there's plenty of like thousands of podcasts out there, three episodes, two episodes, you know? Right. So, I mean, I think there's a lot to be said for, you know, longevity. If you can stick around and you're good, even if you don't have the money to have really slick production values, if you're passionate about what you are talking about, whether it's comics or whatever, anything geek or, you know, gardening, it doesn't matter. If you're passionate about it and you keep doing it for long enough and you're good, it's going to rise to the top. People will find you for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you celebrated your 5th year anniversary, right? In the summer of the podcast.
No, actually that was last year. So I started in 2013 with
the video stuff, right?
Video. Yeah. So last year was 5 years with the podcast.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So yeah, last year. So,
but that's a hurdle. That's a journey that most people don't get.
Yeah. When I think back on how long I've been doing that, like how long I've been interviewing people and been like press badge at conventions or whatever, I'm like, where did the time go?
Yeah.
And you know, like we said, you stepped away from CGS, but you did your own thing with the Daily Rios and you still, you know, obviously it's not 5 days a week, but you're still doing it. So talk to us a little bit about, you know, I always want to have content creators on, I like to ask them, like, what are you're not making money at this, you know, you're not getting rich doing this. So there must be a reason behind it. Like, what is your motivation that you're still doing it all these years later, having been one of the pioneers of comic book podcasting?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, your title of content creator, I mean, that was the big push for podcasting when it first came into play at the end of 2004 and the beginning of 2005. Adam Curry, the mastermind behind the RSS feed and podcasting, what would be known as podcasting, it really was about breaking away from radio and proving that anybody could have interesting things to say, and you could find a listenership, right? So what's your passion? As you say, gardening, whatever, you know, like it could be about anything. As long as you were passionate about it, people wanted to listen to it. So for me, maybe it's my theater background. Maybe I've always sort of been extroverted, you know, the idea of creating, was appealing. So that's like the Daily Rio stuff. Like when I wanted to just branch out on my own, and then a year later after I left CGS, I started the Daily Rio. For me, it really was about what can I do with podcasting? Like it wasn't like I wanted to reinvent it. I just wanted to do some crazy stuff, you know, to the point with, like I said, I would just dump a small clip of some speech, historical speech, because of a news event that happened that day. And then if you listen to it and you got it, great. If you listen to it and you went, I don't know what the heck he's talking about, okay, fine, there'll be another episode tomorrow. For CGS, we were just emulating what we were doing at the comic store for years prior, where just a bunch of people got together. We stuck a mic in front of our face. People listened. And then it really became about, this is fun. We're having fun. Yes, we started to get sponsorships, but some of our major sponsorships didn't happen. Even though we were sponsored by them, we weren't getting direct payment from them for years because we just loved their service and we wanted to share it with everybody. And it really just became about, this was a group of friends who got together to talk about comics. So the show was born out of that, you know. When it came time to do the Daily Rios, I love the medium of podcasting. I love to hear people talk. I love their ideas. I fortunately am in a place where I can invest a little more time, you know, and not have to worry about getting paid or sponsorships or anything like that. I just love it. And I don't put out as many episodes as I want to these days just because of the pandemic or whatever and life situations that happened this year. It doesn't mean I'm not always thinking about it.
Right.
So I think it's the artist in me. I think I go back to the old school days of podcasting where putting out an episode, 15-minute episode once a day, once every other day. And if two people are listening, great. If 20 people are listening, awesome. If I'm the only one listening, awesome. I just do it because I want to do it. I have a passion for it. I've had people reach out. So, this is the topic, obviously, I'm sure we would have talked about. I'm recording this right now on a laptop that you sent me because I had lost my laptop that, had yeah, through all the Daily Rios episodes and elsewhere. And at the time, I was like hemming and hawing about a fundraiser, right? I was like, oh, I don't know if I want to do this. I'm always sort of leery about this, blah, blah, blah. But I had people reach out and say, look, I've been listening to you for 15 years. Mm-hmm. I would be more than happy to give you, you know, send you a donation, blah, 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 blah. And I've had people reaching out and saying, I don't understand why you don't have a Patreon and all this kind of stuff. And I think it really comes down to the old school, I always feel like podcasting should be free, whatever that means. But I also feel like I would be doing this if two people were listening because I just love the idea of it. You know, I love that, like, we only know each other because of emails or listening to the show, each other's shows or Twitter or whatever, but we can sit here and have a conversation because we have like minds or mm-hmm. this is somebody might find this interesting or somebody, there might be 10 people who have heard a lot of my stories before. There might be 20 people that haven't. And then suddenly the new year rolls around. They're like, I'm starting a podcast because they make it sound interesting, you know? So, are there some perks that I've had over the years? Absolutely. It was amazing to not have to pay to go to conventions, you know, to walk into a door. It was kind of weird the first time I actually did have to buy a ticket. I was like, wait, what? I got to pay for a convention. You know, that was kind of weird. But just seeing people, right? Like meeting people and then they come up and say, hey, here's my book, read it. You know, I'm like, oh my God, that's awesome. You know, getting on press releases or publisher sending you, you know, promo, whatever the heck they're called. Yeah, I don't even remember what they're called, like preview copies of books and all that mm-hmm. kind of stuff. Sure. There are perks. I feel like we've, you know, especially with CGS anyway, we've earned a lot of that stuff, you know, over the years, which was kind of fun. So why do you do it? Why do you keep doing it? You know,
Well, it's, it's so similar. We're of such like minds. I'm the same way. Like podcasting should be free. Like I never set up a Patreon or ask people. I just don't, it's just not who I am. I feel, and I've had this conversation with people before. I feel like, okay, once I start taking money from listeners for it, now I'm obligated. Now in a way I work for them, you know, whereas right now I have the freedom. I can talk about what I want to talk about. I'm not beholden to anybody. It's my show. And when I got affiliated with LRM Online, you know, the site that you know, hosts some of my stuff. I mean, it's still put out under all the RSS feeds and everything, but you know, I post on my own website, but it's also posted on a webpage on their website. And one of the first things when they wanted to bring me on, I said was, I own this. If I ever leave, it all comes with me. or I'm not signing anything. This is my blood, sweat, and tears. This is my time away from family. Like, no, it is mine. But yeah, I do it, like you said, because it's fun, because I like talking about comics. I like getting people to read comics. But it is surreal. Yeah. And the same way, I get perks. Yeah, I get to go to shows and I do get the preview copies, and I'm grateful for all that. It's not that I am not still supporting the industry. I'd still buy way too many physical books. I'm running out of room quickly. But yeah, you got to stop. And here's the thing, you meet people, and I, you know, especially because I get the digital copies, and I mostly read things digitally, you know, because it's so much easier. But I want to support my friends that I have in the industry, you know, by buying their books. So
sure,
yeah, there's, you know, there's that aspect to it too. But
I think you also, the other thing that maybe you're more familiar with it, because I don't have kids or, you know, anything like that. But I also look at podcasting as sort of time capsules. It's very interesting to listen to those early CGS episodes or any podcast from you know, 2005, 2006, and hear what fandom was like and hear how we talked about comics and what was exciting at those times. And then when I was doing the Daily Rios, and one of the longtime listener said, yeah, you know, you're kind of doing like this podcast verite thing, you know, where it's just, you're just, it's a little voyeuristic, you know, a little bit of your life. Because there were times I would record my family and just, you know, my grandmother and just talk about silly stuff. But, you know, my grandmother's no longer with me. I have that podcast. I can go back and actually hear her voice, you know. And I think about people with families. Will it be interesting if you know, if you have someone who maybe years from now goes back and go, I want to hear my dad, my wife, my sister, my brother, whatever. I want to hear what they had to say and how geeky they were. And, oh, look, you know, they're not only talking about geek stuff, they're also talking about their family and their accomplishments or whatever. So in the terms of a time capsule, if someone's out there, like, they're like, well, I want a podcast, and I kind of know what I want to talk about. Think of it in those terms. You know, it's a journal. It can be a journal. It can be a family recording, you know. It can be some kind of, you get to live on for as long as the episodes are, you know, hosted somewhere.
Well, so, Jamie D himself is a great example of that.
Yeah. Yeah. One of our co-hosts who no longer with us, you know, but you can still hear his voice and people still talk to him about him to this day. And you get to share, you know, those episodes that I've heard with your son, you know, or like, you know, that there are very interesting ways that podcasts can be more than just people talking, you know. So if you're willing to talk, one of the things I really regretted not doing, I wanted to create a podcast called Cuatro, which is Spanish for four, because in my family at one point we had my grandmother, my mother, who was the first, she was my grandmother's first child and was a daughter. Then we had my older sister, and then my older sister had only one child, which was a daughter. We had four generations of female Puerto Ricans, except my niece is half Puerto Rican. Four generations, most of them were first daughters. And I wanted to do this whole, it was, I don't know, some kind of NPR-ish kind of thing about the generational gap, you know, my grandmother who speaks Spanish and English, my niece who only speaks English, you know, like my grandmother and my mother who were born in Puerto Rico, but everybody else who was born here. Like, I just thought there were some really interesting things. My grandmother passed away. I never got a chance to do it, but it's like one of those things where I was like, there was a great use of podcasting that I could have shared with a lot of my family, and I could have learned a lot about my own family, and I never got around to it. So in terms of content creating, the time capsule aspect of it, I think, is really interesting.
Yeah, that I've never thought about it that much, other than with Jamie, you know, after he passed. I'm like, well, we still, you know, he's in a way, he's still with us. But you're right. I mean, I do have those episodes with my son, who was, you know, involved for a while he's still in high school before he got the, you know, car perfume disease. But I even did one with my daughter, you know, where we talked about an episode of DC Superhero Girls, which she loves. And it was so funny. Yeah, I think she was 8 at the time, and she's trying to, you know, sound analytical and everything. And it is just a joy. Like, I've gone back and listened to it 3 or 4 times since we recorded it about a year ago. It's just so fun. I can't wait. Maybe I'll play it at her wedding or something.
Right.
That's so great.
I mean, all of social media is that way, right? Everybody's sticking videos on Instagram and yeah. Facebook. Like, you know, those of us who grew up back in the Polaroid days and oh, I have maybe a handful of pictures at, of certain ages, you know, I don't even, you know, it's crazy. It's crazy.
Well, even the difference between my two kids, we say all the time, we have thousands of pictures of my daughter, you know, born in 2011, my son born in 1995. Eh, like, you know, like you said, a hand, just a handful. So I would feel guilty sometimes because we were, when our daughter was born, we were always putting pictures up on social media. I'm like, I got to go find some pictures of Jaden. And, you know, I'm taking a picture of a picture with my phone just so he doesn't feel left out, you know, just because you feel bad. You know, it's been great chatting with you, Peter. I don't want to take up too much more of your time. We'll definitely have to collaborate on something a little more comic book centric at some point, do a review. Or something like that. And hopefully one of these days, you know, the pandemic will end and I'll be out on the East Coast and we can get together. I do want to ask one more question, speaking of time capsule and back in the day. I wonder if you can remember the first time you were at a show and somebody heard your voice, or, you know, the first time somebody recognized you as, oh my God, I listened to you on your podcast. Do you still remember that first time?
Yeah, I don't remember the first time. I know there's been a couple conventions where, like, I'll just be digging through the some back issues and somebody will, I'm talking to like one of the other geeks, and then somebody rolls up and like, hey, aren't you such and such from? It's like, yeah. The weirdest one, I'll give you the weirdest one, the craziest one. I was standing on a corner in South Philly when I used to live in South Philly, right outside my apartment, talking on the phone with I don't even know who. Somebody walks by. So and then I'm out there again talking. I'm just still there. That person comes back the other way and then looks at me and says, are you Peter from Comic Geek Speak? I was like, what is going on?
You're like, not even at a show among your people.
I'm outside my apartment just talking on the phone. Yeah, it's a friend of mine. He's now a friend. In fact, I choreographed a wedding dance for him and his wife when they got married. Oh, it's been a bunch of years now ago. He knew the show. He lived in Philly. He still does. And we randomly text and talk to this day. He was just a random – that was the weirdest thing ever. We still joke about it to this day. We still laugh about it. But that – it goes to show you the power of the podcasting, the audio power, right, that you recognize someone's voice just because they're talking loudly on a corner street. Yeah. So that was the weirdest one. Yeah.
Yeah. In a way, you, especially if you're putting out, you know, almost daily content, you become a part of these people's lives, you know, associating, you know, your voice and things you're talking about with events in their life. It's surreal in a way.
Listeners will know, will remember and will remember what you said more than you will remember what you said. Yeah. Because, you know, as you know, we're just talking and maybe we have an outline or some notes and we're just like, okay, I got to talk about this. Got to talk about this. And sometimes it gets to the point by the end of the episode, you're like, did I talk about that? I don't remember. but listeners will come to you 2 years. Hey, I remember you said this. I grew up in the same area, or I knew that person, or, you know, I remembered you. So here's a book. I remember you said you hadn't read it yet, you know, and you're just like, oh my God, I can't believe they remember. It's amazing. It's amazing. Yeah,
it really, really is.
Yeah.
Well, as we're closing up here, Peter, why don't you let everybody know where they can find you online, where they can find your podcast that doesn't come out as often as you'd like, but you're still out there creating content.
Yeah. Thedailyrios.com is the best place. That's where I put out all my podcasts. There's even a link down at the bottom to my Twitter, Peter J. Rios. One of my New Year's resolutions is to record more, because I have so many, as I'm sure you do, outstanding things that I have yet to do, yet to finish. And a lot of it is just motivation. A huge thank you to you. I mentioned it earlier, because this MacBook that you sent my way after my MacBook had gave up the ghost has been such a lifesend, not only for podcasting, but for work as well, because we're living in this very remote world. So as you said, this has been a long time coming, you know, having this conversation, but also the outpouring of support that I did get over this year to fundraise for a new laptop, which I'm just waiting to go purchase it, you know, these days. But also the use of this laptop that I'm recording this episode on. Such a lifesaver, such a lifesaver. So thank you, thank you, thank you.
You know, it was my pleasure. I was glad I was able to help, Peter. And like you were saying earlier, you know, other people saying, you know, 15 years of, you know, I didn't start, you know, that long ago, but once I discovered CGS, I think it was around 2010, I was in. And so, yeah, you've given me hours and hours of pleasure. And so I was happy to help. And the other thing was, you know, when we were talking about it, you know, I brought up the possibility. I loved what you said about, once I get my new one, once the fundraiser is complete and I go get my new one, I'm going to, you know, pay it forward and, you know, give this one to somebody else in need. I love that idea of paying it forward, you know, because I certainly don't need it back. So yeah, we'll, you know, it will find another home and help somebody else out. So
great.
Again, thank you so much for joining me. I'll put a link to Peter's website in the show notes, everybody, and a link to his Twitter as well. So you can give him a follow. And, from me to you, Peter, and your family, happy holidays. Merry Christmas. I hope it's a safe one. And to the listeners as well. So any final thoughts as we're signing off here?
No, just thank you for letting me play in your sandbox. And you're right. We'll have to come together and we've talked about some things, but we'll have to see what this new year brings and see if there's anything on the horizon that is either interesting or maybe something in the past, you know, maybe we'll dig into something that we're unfamiliar with, or maybe one of us is familiar with, and we'll collaborate on something and get a bunch of episodes out.
Yeah. Sounds great. Cool. Okay, everybody, that's going to do it for this episode of the Comic Source Podcast. As always, I want to thank you all for joining, and we'll talk to you next time.
You can find the Comic Source Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.